Welcome to the Investment Conversation. I'm Tony Fisher.
The combination of very strong demand and snarled supply chains is really resulting in a much bigger inflationary impulse than people anticipated when we got this big demand stimulus to carry the economy through the COVID period. But the labor market in broad terms is really just another manifestation of the Humpty Dumpty economy that's not coming back together again in the way that it existed before we fell into the COVID chasm.
Much like everything about the COVID-19 pandemic, the rebound of the U.S. economy from the shutdown-imposed weakness of 2020 looks quite different from any previous recoveries. The irregular shape and pace of the recovery calls to mind a famous nursery rhyme character who also faced difficulties in becoming whole again after a precipitous fall. Lord Abbott partner and director of strategic asset allocation Giulio Martini picks up the story in this conversation with my colleague Will Andrews.
Giulio, in a recent commentary on LordAbbott.com, you invoke a famous egg-shaped wall sitter to describe the current U.S. economic recovery. Can you elaborate on that?
Will, thanks for having me. And you're right. I've called this the Humpty Dumpty economy. And I've done so because, you know, when the economy fell into the chasm that was triggered by the shutdowns that were necessary to deal with the healthcare crisis in early 2020, a lot of pieces shattered. And now that we're up and out over the other side, what we're finding is that the pieces are not fitting together again very easily. And so the Humpty Dumpty analogy seemed appropriate.
So I guess we go from fairy tales to the real world then. Before we sat down today, you spoke of the larger narrative about the current U.S. recovery. One of the things you mentioned was the divergence in demand for two key sectors of the economy and the destructive effects they've had on the shape of the recovery. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, that's right. And, you know, I think in very broad terms, what we're seeing is that as the pieces come back together and don't fit well, the friction that's being created is an inflationary impulse in different segments of the economy. And let me explain why that's happening. What we're seeing is consumer demand almost back to its pre-COVID trend. And consumers and households have been very well supported by fiscal transfers, things like generous unemployment insurance programs, the new child tax credit that just became effective in July. Before that, emergency assistance payments to households. And those stimulated consumer spending greatly. But it was channeled into demand for tangible things, for goods, things like cars, furniture, renovations around the home, meals, cooking at home really boomed. So people bought a lot of household appliances and kitchen utensils and things like that. And the demand for those things simply outran the supply. And so what we saw was a very big increases in prices for those items that consumer demand was channeled into. At the same time, the decline in spending on services did not depress prices in those areas. They merely stayed where they were. And so we've seen this inflationary impulse. Now, it's not just a demand side story. We're also seeing that global supply chains are being strained enormously by the increase in demand. And in fact, in many cases, surprisingly so. So things like semiconductors are in very short supply. You know, there are some autos, for instance, that require dozens of different kinds of chips to be manufactured. And just being out of one or two of those means that the car or the truck can't be produced. And so we've seen a big decline in auto production and a big increase in new and used car prices because of shortage of chips. But it's not, it doesn't stop there. You know, when people try and go on vacation now and rent a car, the shortage of automobiles and the shortage of used cars is increasing the price of rentals. It's increasing the price of U-Hauls. It's increasing, you know, the price of a broad range of goods that need to be shipped internationally because freight rates for trucking and for shipping are increasing as the demand for goods outstrips the supply. So the combination of very strong demand and snarled supply chains is really resulting in a much bigger inflationary impulse than people anticipated when we got this big demand stimulus to carry the economy through the COVID period.
I think we want to talk not only about the goods producing sector of the economy, but I think some of the aspects of the effect on services and some of the disruptions we've seen in that sector.
Well, the disruptions in services and the pieces not fitting back together again easily in services has a lot more to do with the labor market. You know, the services are very human being intensive, whether it's restaurant meals or visits to a doctor or sports events. You know, a very large component of what's being produced is being produced with labor input. So you need people to produce services. And what we're seeing is after this big increase in unemployment in 2020, it's proving to be difficult to get people back on the job. And it's difficult because people have healthcare concerns. You know, the virus is still infecting a lot of people. You know, the vaccination rate is still around, you know, 60% for people with two shots of the vaccine. A lot of people have childcare responsibilities or family responsibilities because schools have been closed and, you know, loved ones have been ill. And so they're not able to come back to work. A lot of people are reprioritizing is what we hear, that, you know, they want to be able to work remotely, at least for part of the week. And that wasn't necessarily the situation beforehand. And then, of course, there have been quite generous unemployment insurance benefits and all of those things have made it difficult to get people back to work. And that's particularly affecting the services sector. Now, the way we're seeing it is that wage inflation has really come back much more quickly and much more forcefully after the recession ended than we've seen at the end after past downturns. And so that source of cost pressure, which, of course, in the past has also added to, you know, inflationary types of situations, is also becoming much more evident. And so that adds to the pressure on goods prices from the services side and through labor costs as well. But the labor market in broad terms is really just another manifestation of the Humpty Dumpty economy that's not coming back together again in the way that it existed before we fell into the COVID chasm.
We actually discussed the situation with the U.S. labor market in an earlier podcast in August called U.S. Inflation, Working Out the Impact of Labor Costs. Of course, that's available both on lordabbott.com and on listeners' favorite streaming media services. So the third and maybe final thread we've talked about is how China has proven resilient through the pandemic and the sort of outsized growth, economic growth, that it's seen. How does this factor into current considerations, Julia? What are you seeing there?
I think in many ways, China has been really a big economic surprise. You know, as the pandemic started, a lot of people believed that global supply chains were going to be rerouted away from China, both as a result of, you know, growing tension between China and the rest of the world, and also because of, you know, too much of the global healthcare supply chain really being dependent on production in China and the origin of the virus there. A combination of all those things made people believe China would be disadvantaged by this situation. But what we're finding is that the opposite has taken place. In fact, China has boomed during this period. Its manufacturing sector has been incredibly resilient, incredibly reliable. It's really been the go-to manufacturer in the world by far, both because of its size and because of the dependability of the firms there and the workers that you know have jobs in those factories. And as a result, China has boomed. And if you look at the numbers, you know, China had a very, very bad first quarter of 2020, but it bounced back almost immediately and then started to grow quite rapidly. So that the Chinese economy is, you know, 6 or 7% larger than it was at the peak at the end of 2019. Now, the U.S. economy has also performed really well, but GDP just returned to the prior peak in the second quarter of 2021. So this has been a period where the Chinese economy has just kind of forged ahead in terms of growth. And as a result, you know, it was already the second largest economy in the world before the downturn. As a result, it's been catching up much more rapidly after COVID than it was before COVID. And of course, you know, this is kind of a new situation for the world economy where, you know, for most of the post-World War II period, the United States has been unchallenged really as the world's largest economy, the kind of, you know, the economy that no one could really live without having both demand and supply side linkages to. And now there's another, you know, really big kid on the block who's almost as large as the United States. And, you know, looking at the projections now, the year in which the Chinese economy overtakes the U.S. has been accelerated by considerably, you know, by the whole COVID experience and how the Chinese economy has reacted. So, you know, that's another way that the pieces are not really fitting back together again the same way that they were arranged before COVID, is that, you know, the relative size of different countries and different regions is really changing in a faster way than it was before.
You said in a recent note that in speaking about the current economy, if Humpty Dumpty doesn't get put back together again soon, the low inflation, low volatility fairy tale the financial markets have been living in since the mid-1990s could give way to a darker stagflationary interlude. Now, Giulio, I haven't heard the word stagflation, I think, since I was listening to Fleetwood Mac on my 8-track tape player. What is stagflation, and why should we worry so much about it?
Well, Will, I didn't realize that Fleetwood Mac had a song about stagflation. But, you know, as an economist, I'm going to have to go back and listen to it. But just, you know, to give you a sense of it, you know, stagflation is a situation where the economy is operating below potential output, growth is slow, but inflation is accelerating nevertheless. And so it's kind of the worst of all worlds because, you know, if inflation is accelerating because demand is strong and the economy is ripping, you know, forward and growing, at least, you know, there are benefits in terms of higher earnings, more jobs, rising wages in that situation. But in a stagflationary situation where the economy is below trend and inflation is accelerating, you kind of have the worst of both worlds because of slow growth going hand in hand with rising prices and likely rising bond yields as well.
Okay.
I wonder how Fleetwood Mac got all of that into one song, but you know, Stevie Nicks was a great songwriter, so I'm sure she found a way to be really clever in doing so.
Finally, Giulio, after all we've discussed here, what should investors take away from all this?
Well, what you're seeing right now, Will, and you know, this is very much the Fed's interpretation and the interpretation of most of the economics profession, investment strategists, investors, market, and you know, participants, is that they view these inflationary frictions as being transitory. In other words, you know, what we're seeing right now is, you know, price increases of, you know, 4 to 6% year over year. That's way beyond the Fed's 2% medium term target. But everybody believes that these are transitional phenomena that are related to this period in which the pieces are not fitting together well, but that going into 2022, all these frictions will give way to a much smoother functioning of the economy that will involve inflation coming back down to around 2% by the end of next year. Now, the problem with that is that if the frictions last for longer, or I shouldn't say the problem, the risk with believing that 2% inflation is coming back so quickly is that these frictions and this transition last for longer. It starts to affect inflation expectations because it's more persistent than people believe. And rising inflation expectations find their way into wage demands in a tight labor market that then, you know, go around and create more inflation in a second round situation. And then we get into sort of a little bit of an inflationary spiral, particularly if the economy remains strong throughout this period. So I think the risk is that, this surge of inflation, which has already lasted for longer and been more significant than people believed it would be, turns out to be longer still and even more forceful. And then it starts to create some of the inflationary dynamics, which create a trend kind of acceleration of inflation that's greater than what we're looking for right now. And if the signs emerge that the risk of that is increasing, then I think what we're going to see is the Fed become a little less accommodative, a little bit more insistent that it has to start, removing accommodation through reducing asset purchases and eventually increasing interest rates. And, you know, we've got financial markets that are very, very sensitive to interest rate increases and very, very dependent on a low rate, low volatility, low inflation environment. And when and if that gets challenged, and I want to say if that gets challenged, because it's by no means sure that it will be yet, but if it does get challenged, that will expose a source of vulnerability, which could prove to be significantly greater than people believe it is right now.
Giulio, this has been a great, fascinating chat, as always, and I don't think we'll ever quite think of Humpty Dumpty in the same way again. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me on, Will, and look forward to talking with you again soon. I think the Humpty Dumpty theme is going to be with us for a while.
If you'd like a transcript of today's podcast or have any further questions on the topics covered today, please contact your Lord Abbott representative. And as always, you can read more economic insights from Giulio Martini on lordabbott.com.
Subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite streaming app of choice. Thank you for listening.
Asset allocation or diversification does not guarantee a profit or protect against loss in declining markets. No investing strategy can overcome all market volatility or guarantee future results. Market forecasts and projections are based on current market conditions and subject to change without notice. Projections should not be considered a guarantee. This broadcast may contain assumptions that are forward-looking statements, which are based on certain assumptions of future events. Actual events are difficult to predict and may differ from those assumed. There can be no assurance that forward-looking statements will materialize or that actual returns or results will not be materially different from those described here. This broadcast serves as reference material and is provided for general educational purposes only. Does not constitute an offer to acquire, solicitation for, an offer to acquire, or an offer to sell or solicitation for any offer to buy any securities, nor is intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, investment advice, or in any securities, and cannot be used for any of the foregoing. The views and opinions expressed by the Lord Abbott speaker are those of the speaker as of the date of the broadcast and do not necessarily represent the views of the firm as a whole. Any such views are subject to change at any time based upon market or other conditions, and Lord Abbott disclaims any responsibility to update such views. Neither Lord Abbott nor the Lord Abbott speaker can be responsible for any direct or incidental loss incurred by applying any of the information offered. The value of investments and any income from them is not guaranteed and may fall as well as rise, and an investor may not get back the amount originally invested. Investment decisions should always be made based on an investor's specific financial needs, objects, goals, time horizon, and risk tolerance. Please consult your investment professional for additional information concerning your specific situation. The information provided is not directed at any investor or category of investors and is provided solely as general information about Lord Abbett's products and services and to otherwise provide general investment education. None of the information provided should be regarded as a suggestion to engage in or refrain from any investment-related course of action, as neither Lord Abbett nor its affiliates are undertaking to provide impartial investment advice, act as an impartial advisor, or give advice in a fiduciary capacity. If you are an individual retirement investor, contact your financial advisor or other fiduciary about whether any given instrument, idea, strategy, product, or service may be appropriate for your circumstances. This broadcast is the copyright 2021 of Lord Abbett & Co., LLC, all rights reserved. This recording may not be reproduced in whole or in part or in any form without the permission of Lord Abbett. Lord Abbett Mutual Funds are distributed by Lord Abbett Distributor, LLC.